Welcome to episode 125 of Practical Defense, Mailbag. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Haddix. We have a fantastic episode this week, packed with all sorts of juicy goodness. I have some great emails to read and discuss, and two audio contributions from fellow Gun Rights Radio Network podcasters. But first, I have a couple of announcements, and we'll start with the big one. I am going to host a Massad Ayoub seminar here in Los Angeles. We've set a date for January 29th and 30th of 2011. So why January of next year? Because Mass is booked solid until then. The seminar will be his MAG 20, and I'll read the description here. It's a two-day, 20-hour immersion course in the rules of engagement for armed, law-abiding private citizens, emphasizing legal issues, tactical issues, and aftermath management. Topics will include interacting with suspects, witnesses, responding to police officers, threat recognition and mindset, management of social and psychological aftermath after having had to use lethal force in defense of self or others, and preparing beforehand for legal repercussions and minimizing exposure to them. Situations in the home, at the place of business, or on the street will all be covered. I have a location set up, but I'm going to switch to one closer to LAX to make it easier for those flying in for the seminar. I will certainly be talking more about this, and will post all of the information when we have the location locked down. It has been years since Mass has taught in California, so this is going to be a huge event. It's definitely not something that you want to miss. Now, of course, anything I say after that is going to seem minor and inconsequential, but here goes. I've managed to change the URL for the podcast fan page on Facebook. The URL is much simpler, and it's, you know, www.facebook.com/practicaldefense. And of course, also, you can follow me on Twitter, and that URL is www.twitter.com/practicaldef. So what I do on Facebook and Twitter is talk about my projects, I link to articles I find interesting, and interact with listeners at the show. I have the Facebook page linked to my Twitter feed, so when I post to Facebook, it's automatically echoed on Twitter. I also post updates and information on the show. Now, for example, when I couldn't get the show out last week, I posted to Facebook and Twitter letting everyone know. Also, they were the first ones to know about the Massad Ayoub seminar. I was also a recent guest on Eric Shelton's show, The Handgun Podcast. Eric is also a member of the GRRN, and in his episode 97 called Gun Fu, we talk about the reality of martial arts in terms of self-defense. And we spend a good amount of time talking about grappling as a self-defense tactic, the influence of the UFC, and a bunch of other things. It's a great episode on a great show, and I recommend you check it out. Those that have already listened to Eric's show, because there was some crossover between our programs, know that in addition to everything else I'm doing right now and training in, I'm also practicing judo. Yeah, I know. What the heck? So, now I'm training in three martial arts at the same time. And before you ask, yes, my brain is hurting, and most of my body as well. So I'm still training in my primary art of American Kenpo. I'm also training in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu and combining it with American Kenpo, which I'll go into more in a future episode. End of last week, I am now training in judo. Okay, now to explain. Yes, I'm training in judo and learning some really cool things. And holy crap, is it an incredible workout. Now, however, I am really not pursuing it for rank or to compete, although the master is already trying to talk me into starting matches in 6 months or so. The deal is, my 80-year-old father has decided that he needs more exercise, and he settled on judo. Why judo? Because it's taught close to him in his community center. So on Tuesday nights, I take my father to judo practice. I'm not certain how long it'll last, but it will be a lot of fun while it does. And when my father stops, I'll stop as well. It's just something fun and interesting we can do together. So, now that we have all of that out of the way, let's get to the emails.
The gun control industry keeps clamoring for national ballistic fingerprint databases and micro-stamping technology to be made mandatory for new firearms. This is an odd position, given that the Department of Justice said that fingerprinting systems, quote, do not provide conclusive results, and the BATF Journal says that 46% of micro-stamping impressions ranked as unsatisfactory, and that micro-stamps wear away after as few as 10 rounds. Why, then, the push for failed technologies? Because all these schemes require firearm registration to be remotely useful, and registration is useful to the gun control industry for confiscation purposes. As is always the case with gun control proposals, there is a different agenda than crime control. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Welcome back. First up, let's hear from Tony Brown of the Armed 8 podcast and Firearms Cafe.
Hello again, everyone. This is Tony Brown, the host of Firearms Cafe and the Armed 8 podcast, joining you once again courtesy of Alex Haddix. On episode 123 of Practical Defense, Alex and Steve talked about a road raid incident that happened to Steve, and this story reminded me of an incident that happened to me a few months ago, and I learned a really interesting lesson from this. I was driving home with my child in the back seat of the truck, and I'll give a brief description of the road and the area. The road that I was going to turn onto to get into my neighborhood is a T-shaped intersection. The top of the T, or the horizontal part, is an east-west road, and the bottom, or the vertical part of the T, is southbound. Normally, the posted speed limit for that road is 35 miles per hour, and on the north side of the road is a park and a school. At the time of day that we were coming home, the road, and this is going to, which is the east-west road, so the top of the T, is a school zone, and the maximum speed limit is 15 miles per hour. Also, at this time, you're not supposed to pass any other vehicles if you're heading the same direction. The road itself is quite wide. The lanes, the individual lanes themselves, are big and wide, and there are also bike lanes on each side, which adds to the width. And there is a turn lane that runs the entire length, runs down the entire length of the road as well. We were heading west on the top of the T, so on that horizontal part, and we are in the school zone. So I've slowed down, and I'm entering into the turn lane to head south. Now, all of a sudden, I hear a horn just blasting at me repeatedly, just over and over again. And this went on for about probably 3 to 4 seconds. I know that 3 to 4 seconds doesn't sound like a long time, but count out 3 to 4 seconds, and at the same time, imagine that you're honking the horn or making that horn sound the whole time. And in this context, the sounding of the horn for 3 or 4 seconds is actually, it's quite a long time. Now, at first I thought, oh my gosh, there's a kid or a dog or something that I didn't see, or, you know, maybe my truck's on fire or something. I don't know. Now, remember that I'm in the turn lane, and in the interest of full disclosure, maybe about 2 feet of the corner of the passenger side of my truck bed is overhanging the turn lane. The reason that the bed is sticking out a little is that to designate the school zone, they have one of those portable signs that they'll roll out with the posted speed limit and everything on it, and that sits in the middle of the road. And sometimes it's placed in a manner to where you can't, if you enter the turn lane too early, you won't be able to turn. The sign will actually block your way into turning into the street. So you have to kind of go around the sign a little bit to make the turn. Anyway, I hear the horn going off, and the next thing I see is a person pulls up alongside of me and is screaming and giving me the finger from their vehicle. And then they pass me and they blast through the school zone. My initial response, once I realized that this person was mad because I didn't get into the turn lane earlier. And remember, I can't get into the turn lane earlier because the sign blocks the turn. But my reaction was one of perplexed amusement. I couldn't believe the amount of anger I was seeing displayed. I wasn't afraid. If they had gotten out of their vehicle, I would have just driven off the second I saw them getting out. So why did they get so mad? Again, it wasn't that they were stuck behind me and couldn't get by because they passed me. They were able to drive by. It wasn't that I had cut them off. It was just that they were in a hurry and probably having a bad day. Is the lesson that I learned one of just stay calm and let it go and don't make something out of nothing? Well, that is part of it, but a very small part. Now, I'm going to fill you in on a couple of details that I left out, and then we'll talk about the lesson that I learned. Number one, the driver was a woman. She was in her late 40s, had blonde shoulder-length hair and blue eyes, and looked to be of average weight. Number two, the mid-size SUV she was driving was one that I had seen in the neighborhood often. It's a very distinct color, and I immediately recognized it. Number three, from my driveway, I can see into the next neighborhood over, and it's a small gated community. And when I looked in there the next day, what did I see? I saw that SUV parked out in their driveway. So now I know where she lives. So let's look at it from another standpoint. She has no idea who I am. She had no idea whether I was armed or not. She doesn't know that if I am the type of person who would want some kind of a payback. She also doesn't know if, as a man, I would see what she did as a huge insult to me and that I needed to teach her some respect. And there are many cultures in the world where women are not regarded highly. And as we know, the U.S. is a big melting pot, and there are people from all sorts of different cultures that are living here in the U.S. with us right now. The lesson that I learned is don't be that person. Don't let yourself get out of control because you don't know who that other person is and what they may be capable of doing in the moment. And the reason I say this really isn't from a fear-based place. It comes from just being a decent human being. You know, we talk about things like awareness and avoidance. So what we don't want to do is to invite harm or hardship into our lives. Basically, we just don't want to look for trouble. Well, that's going to do it for me today. Thank you for spending some of your time with me. Stay safe and stay informed.
Thanks, Tony. We always appreciate your advice. And next, we have a message from Eric Shelton of the Handgun Podcast.
Hey, Alex. I just finished listening to the Road Rage episode, and some of the things that were said during that podcast really brought some thoughts to mind that I thought I would share with you, and you in turn may want to share with your listeners. If you do decide to share this with your listeners, I'm going to continue acting as if I'm addressing them. And I want you guys to realize that anything I'm about to bring out here are all lessons that I've learned the hard way, much like everything else on the Handgun Podcast. So please don't take this as preaching, okay? But the first thing you need to understand is that 80% of drivers think they're an above average driver. Now, this is mathematically impossible. So right away, we need to stop and take a look at ourselves honestly and say, are we really that good of a driver, okay? If everyone thinks they're above average, where do you truly stand in terms of skill level? And what I would say is, can you define what the apex of a turn is? And in relation to the apex of a turn, can you tell me where you should be braking and where you should be accelerating? If you can't, or if you have to stop and think about it, you are not an above average driver, okay? I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. That's the cold, hard truth. So beyond that, what we need to do is start thinking about vehicle defense, like Alex's friend, because this is stuff that we can find ourselves in. These are situations where we need to be prepared. Now, he mentioned at one point he wanted to get his CHL, concealed handgun license. As Clint Smith says, we should be driving or we should be shooting. We should not be doing both. And I'm glad that he realized that. I believe his name was Steve. Didn't have an appropriate backstop. It was not the place to try and be squeezing off rounds to end a threat. And that's one of the things you need to understand. Escape is always the best option. Now, let's just say that you do have a firearm in the vehicle. First, secure it. Okay, it should be in a holster. It should be on your person. Think about what happens during a wreck. Think about stuff flying everywhere. The OnStar ad where the cell phone goes flying. Do you really want that happening to your pistol because it was hanging loose on the passenger seat or in your dashboard, but your dash is busted open because of the accident and now you don't know where it's flown? Secure it on your person or have something secure in the vehicle. Like, I'm not a fan of the SERPA holsters, but they do have those quick lugs so that you can have the gun in the holster and ratchet it onto and off of different surfaces. That would be an idea. But moving on from that, he mentioned blind spots. If you have your mirrors adjusted properly, you should not have any true blind spot. So your side mirrors, the one on your passenger side door and your driver's side door, if you can see the side of your vehicle when you're looking in those, they're not turned out far enough. You should not be able to see the side of your vehicle because you know what? The side of your vehicle is there, and that's not what you need to be looking at. Crank those bad boys out until you're looking further and eliminating the blind spot. That's what those mirrors are for. And way too many people have a tendency to have them turned too far in, okay? Don't worry about where your vehicle is. It's behind you. Worry about the guy outboard that you can't see. Moving on from that, leave an escape when you're at a traffic stop. When you pull up to somebody, don't pull right up. I don't care where you are. I don't care how dense your population is. Make sure you can see street behind their tires in front of your hood. Leave that space to give you room to maneuver should something happen. I have been at an intersection where two people decided that they were going to rumble right there. Somebody was going to get out of the car, cross, and they were on either side of me. Okay, so there's a guy behind me and to my right and a guy in front of me and to my left, and they decide to get out and start throwing down. They're in the intersection. Leave an escape. If something happens, you need to be able to move, even if that's only so far. Even if somebody comes up trying to open your car doors, which should be locked, give yourself something, some kind of room to maneuver. Lastly, plan your route, okay? This one takes some visualization. But let's say that we're at an intersection. We've been shopping at a store, okay? And this intersection runs north, south, east, west, perfect square. And the store that you've been shopping in is in the southeast corner. Now, you need to head northbound. Let's just say you weren't thinking, and so you decide to pull out on that street that runs north-south. And you're trying to pull out directly in front of the traffic light. This is exactly where traffic is getting stopped, getting backed up, and getting in your way. You can't pull out from there. Now, if it's a larger shopping center, go further to the south. Take the very last exit to give yourself some room to approach the light if you must. Or think this through just a little bit and take the east-west road instead. Now, it's not going where you want. You want to go north. But what this lets you do is turn right, pull away from the light, so the light is now stopping traffic, creating gaps for you and making it easier. U-turns are generally able to be turned by just about every vehicle made today. Think about this, plan your route, and you'll have a much more efficient and safer time because you'll be avoiding road rage incidents if you pull out and you're blocking, say, the right turn lane for the northbound traffic heading into that intersection because you couldn't get all the way across. It's easier to avoid the problems if you can stay mobile. Lastly, while you were in that parking lot, where were you parked? Did you do the parking lot vulture thing and get jammed up around a whole bunch of other cars while you went in there? Or did you park further away because your legs aren't broken and you can actually walk to and from the store? Let me suggest parking further away and under a light. For one, it'll keep your car from getting dinged up from other people who are doing the parking lot vulture thing. For two, get a little bit of exercise. It's healthier for you. And for three, it allows you to keep a field of vision around your vehicle so you know who's around, what's going on, and you can be more aware. This was actually brought to light on a Pro Arms podcast. I believe it was Herman Gunter's daughter, I could be wrong, who found herself in that situation and because of her situational awareness was able to avoid an attack. Keep this stuff in mind, guys, and remember that most of these are lessons I've learned the hard way. I'm not preaching to you, but these are definitely lessons and small methods that are less expensive and common sense than going to a driving school, but can still keep you safe. We'll see you around.
Thanks, Eric, and also thanks again for having me on your show. And now let's get to the emails. Like the first part of the show, this email is also about road rage. I guess episode 123 really touched a chord with a lot of people. This email comes from Chris from Arizona, who is also a deputy sheriff out there. He gives some really good advice from a law enforcement perspective. He writes, "Alex, I just wanted to say I'm a longtime listener to your podcast and appreciate what you do. I'm also a deputy sheriff in Arizona. In reference to the podcast on road rage, an accident by nature is considered to be a civil issue or non-criminal in nature. As law enforcement, we're called to the scene to document what happened so it's on record and to file a report on it so the insurance companies figure out whose insurance will be paying the bills. Unless we were able to prove the intent or that someone knowingly intended that their action would cause the accident, endanger lives of others, or cause damage, I cannot charge anyone criminally. All I can do is issue a civil citation to the person at fault, have them pay the courts a fine, and have Motor Vehicle Division put points on their license. Now, after the vehicles have made contact and the accident took place, that is considered to be the end of the incident. If at that point one of the driver hits or assaults the other driver, you now have a separate incident which resulted from the accident, and criminal charges can be pressed for the assault. The best thing to remember is that whenever something happens, call 911 and give them the information about what happened or what is happening. Make sure you give your name, date of birth, cell phone number, and your location. Not all 911 systems can tell us where you are when you call us, the phone number you called from, or who you are. If in the event you have to leave the area for safety, tell the dispatcher why you had to leave and where you are, or heading to, so law enforcement is able to meet with you in a safe location. Hope this helps." Thanks, Chris, and again, that was really good advice, and I always love hearing from our law enforcement listeners. Now next, I received several emails from listeners about episode 120, which is Martial Arts versus Firearms. That's the show where Paul Wilson of the Karate Cafe podcast joined us. During that discussion, we talked about Kabuto as the Okinawan martial art of weapons training. Now, the emails I received all pointed me to a martial art called Hojutsu Ryu, which is a modern martial art that focuses on firearms. It's about 90% firearms, with 5% empty-handed and the remaining 5% on sticks and knives. It even has katas that employ firearms. Masayub interviewed the art's creator, Soke Jeff Hall, in episode 44 of the Pro Arms podcast. You can find a link to the Pro Arms podcast and a link to the Hojutsu Ryu website in the show notes. And thanks again to everyone who sent me messages about this. Our next email comes from Jim in Arizona. He took issue with a comment I made in episode 120. Again, it's the martial arts versus firearms. Jim writes, "Alex, I never miss one of your podcasts and look forward to it each week. The last podcast about guns and martial arts was a good one, and it sounded like you received lots of good feedback. I would agree with one exception. I didn't really hear you say hunters don't really like shooters, did I? If so, I think you owe hunters an apology. I hope that comment by Jim Zumbo a few years ago has not painted hunters as shooter haters. I didn't like Zumbo even before that. Below is a letter I sent this week to Michael Bain, and I think it would be good for you to read it. I have heard several podcasters this week try to create a dichotomy between hunters and shooters that's just not there. I live in the hunting world as a hunter and professional wildlife biologist, and I have never heard a hunter say anything negative about non-hunting shooters. Why the sudden animosity coming back the other way? I just don't understand it. Thanks and keep up the good work. Because of you, I am much more aware in my everyday life, and that is a good thing." Thanks for the kind words, Jim. Okay, I'll clarify my statement a bit. More accurately, in my experience, hunters think self-defense shooters are a bit overzealous, and I'll defend my point here. But first, you know, I have never met a more unified group than gun people. It doesn't matter what you look like, what you do for a living, what religion you are, if you're male, female, gay, straight, young, old, if you're a gun person, you're good people and accepted. Now, just like martial arts, there are millions of ways to slice that broad group. Now, for example, in the martial arts, we have stand-up fighters, grapplers, traditionalists, mixed martial artists, and reality-based. Now, sure, you might be able to further divide the groups, but that's good enough for this example. Now, similarly, you could subdivide the gun community by hunters, sport or target shooters, and self-defense shooters. You might even slice it more finely by separating the long guns from the handguns. Are there people that cross into multiple categories? Absolutely. You know, I'm a hunter. I'm a big game hunter, and I hunt upland bird. I even have a lifetime California hunting license and a lifetime big game tags. I'm also a self-defense shooter, and I'm a certified firearms instructor in handgun, shotgun, and rifle. Now, based upon your email, you cross over as well. My experience here in California, which I fully admit is not a good representation of most of the U.S. when it comes to guns, is that hunters usually hunt and don't keep firearms for self-defense. I know of only a few self-defense shooters that hunt as well. I know of no pure hunters that are members of the NRA. Now, I'm going to exclude the professional hunters and guides here who are always members of the NRA. Now, however, you need to contrast that with every single self-defense shooter I know is a member of the NRA. When I talk to these hunters, they're always saying how the self-defense shooters are too aggressive and that the hunters don't feel threatened by the laws and regulations because, when it comes to firearms, the hunters feel that they're in a protected class. Hunting shotguns and rifles have never appeared on any of the gun ban lists. They feel no need to join the NRA because they don't need the NRA. There are several problems with that perspective. First, the NRA is primarily a training organization. It was founded in 1871 to teach marksmanship. The NRA is the largest private law enforcement training organization in the country. I don't think anyone comes even close to the NRA in terms of general citizenship training. Now, starting in the 1960s, and with the introduction of the draconian gun banning laws, the NRA created a political arm to lobby the government. It got kicked into high gear in the 1980s when the Brady campaign started. Now the NRA is the largest lobby group in the government. Now, unfortunately, most people know the NRA for the lobby and not their primary function, which is still training. That said, just in the past year or so, I'm starting to hear of more hunters joining the NRA and becoming more political. The reason is that hunters are starting to feel the pressure from the gun banners. The gun banners are starting to look at hunting rifles with their high calibers and fancy scopes, and they're calling them sniper rifles. Hey, maybe these rifles could be used to kill people too, and from a huge distance. My 300 Winchester Magnum hunting rifle is designed to drop elk, bear, and wild pigs at 300 yards. But what these people forget is that just because you can doesn't mean you will. I could also drive my car in a reckless manner and put hundreds of people at risk on the freeway. It doesn't mean that I will. And in fact, there are millions of people on the road every day that don't. Anyway, I'm getting off on a tangent here. I'd also like to point out at the 37-minute mark of the episode 120, I state that much of what I said in the generalities didn't apply to listeners of this show because if you listen to this show, you're automatically in the self-defense category. So, Jim, I hope my clarification helps, and we may still disagree on this point based upon our personal experiences. This episode's going a little bit long, but I'll cover one last email. This one comes from John, who has some suggestions on home security. He writes, "Hi, Alex. I just found your podcast a month ago, but I'm almost caught up on all episodes." Whew, that's a lot of listening, dude, because, 60, 70 hours of material? But thank you. "I have worked in electronic security in Detroit for 37 years, starting as an alarm response guard and now working on servers and equipment for bank security. I've also been the victim of a home breaking and entering once. Most of what you suggest I agree with, and if everyone followed your suggestions, they would be a lot safer in their homes. Changing alarm company signs is great if it makes you feel better, but it does nothing to increase security. Almost all alarm companies use off-the-shelf equipment, and so if it's installed by a great alarm company or a super-duper alarm company, it really doesn't matter. What matters more is the quality of the company installing, servicing, and monitoring your alarm system. The biggest difference in systems today is whether they are wireless or hardwired. More and more alarm systems are being put in with wireless detectors. I heard you mention protecting all of your windows, using glass breaks, contacts, etc. Most people cannot afford that much protection, or even need that much. Of course, your situation may be different. The average scumbag breaking into a home will run through the house looking for anything to grab. The most important device to have is motion detectors in hallways and stairways. If you have pets, of course, you have to adjust them not to trip on the pets, but still trip on people. It can be done. The other very important item to have in a home security system, if you can afford it, is backup communication. Either cell phone or radio backup, so that if your phone line is cut or just not operational, the alarm signals can still be sent to the monitoring center. It's a good idea to test your alarm system on a regular basis. Just don't assume because it works today that it will work next month. Call the alarm company and tell them to put you on a test, and then trip your alarm system and verify that the monitoring center is receiving the signals. Another feature many alarm panels have today is the capability of sending email or SMS messages when events happen, such as an alarm or the system is armed or disarmed. This is a useful feature for the so-called latchkey kids that come home from school while the parents are still at work. As you mentioned, securing the house and the yard are very important. If someone's going to break into my home, I am not going to provide the hammer, ladder, etc. to help them. Also, my windows are supposed to be bowling ball resistant, but I have not tested to prove it. I'll have to tell you more about locking up breaking and entering perps some other day. Sorry for such a long first email. Keep up the good work. You are appreciated. Well, thanks, John. Welcome to the show, and you bring up some excellent points. I look forward to your future emails.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro Second Amendment, pro gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Alrighty, that will do it for this show. Thanks again to everyone who sent in an email. I get new messages every day, and I love reading them. I apologize that I can't respond personally to every single one or read them on the show, but I do read them. I get so much email and have so many topics to cover, I could probably go daily, but I just don't have the time. As you can tell from me missing last week, sometimes I can't even get a weekly show out. Now, if I just had a few sponsors, I might be able to justify the time I spend on the show. Now, of course, don't forget that we have a 20% discount on subscriptions to Taekwondo Times Magazine, who, by the way, is not a paid sponsor. Just enter our exclusive promo code of PRACDEF01 at checkout. The subscription to the print edition of the magazines includes digital copies as well. You can find the promo code and a link in the show notes. And just to clarify, I include this information because I have a column in the magazine and they gave us a discount, but for no other reason. They're just good folks. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexhaddix.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe.
Tom Gilmore lives on a farm. There's a storm on the way, so he's boarding up the windows of his house.
Haley Williams lives in an apartment. It's a beautiful day. She's making her usual monthly donation to the American Red Cross.
Tom doesn't know a tornado will leave his family with no place to go.
Haley doesn't know her gift will help give Tom's family shelter.
When you support the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your area.
Practical Offense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com.